pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thank you very much for listening on this Monday morning. 251-343-0106. If you would like to weigh in on anything we are talking about or discussing this morning, still to come on the program, we'll be joined by Steve Flowers, columnist. Here, that's in about a half hour or so. By the way, text message is 251-343-0106. Keep them coming, guys. Joining us on the line now, very pleased to bring on my next guest running for United States Senate on the Democrat side of the ticket. It's my pleasure to introduce Brendan Dean on the program. Brendan, good morning. How are you?
Hey, Jeff. How you doing?
Doing well. Let's kick it off here. Tell us a little bit about yourself. I know you're the former mayor of Brighton, Alabama, but I'm sure you've got some other experiences and things you could tell our audience about. What do they need to know about you?
Yeah. So other than being the mayor of Brighton, probably the best job I ever had was being an associate of the American Federation of Teachers inside of predominantly Title I schools, advocating on the part of our clients who were members of the American Federation, dealing with a host of issues from governance at the school board level to simply having a presence so that educator, paraprofessionals, classroom instructors, cafeteria workers, janitorial staffing, that they understood that they had an advocate on site at the ready for whatever justice claims, whatever crises, life-altering events that were occurring with them that was going to be consistent. So since 2017, where I was unceremoniously ousted from the mayorship of Brighton as a result of nothing that was contingent upon the judgment of the people, but rather what to me appears to be more of a political maneuver. But since then, I run a policy group, Campaign X, which is based out of Washington, D.C., we advocate for quality of life issues such as the $33 living wage, housing equity, statehood for the District of Columbia, reparations through the vehicle of H.R. 40 and now SB 40 and the Senate companion bill, deaf, blind, and other disability awareness and advocacy, particularly as it affects minoritized groups and Black people and historically marginalized constituencies. So a host of things, and also attacking the inequities around dollars available to Black candidates when they run for state and federal office. But that is probably just a small percentage, a slither of what we occupy. And it's an independently owned firm. I haven't made $8 million or $18 million like the Lincoln Policy Group, which would be a contemporary of the work that I do. But most of our work is unpaid pro bono, and we seek out grants and resources that are available to organizations and institutions that serve the indigent. So that is it in a nutshell. And certainly thank you for acknowledging the people of Brighton, the role that I had there, which is critically important. Particularly at that time, it didn't go the way that I hoped it would, but it is absolutely the honor of my life to know that I could win a Democratic election in my hometown.
Brendan, why U.S. Senate? There's a lot of offices you could run for, but United States Senate is on your list. Tell us a little bit about that.
So, truth be told, I'm a lifelong student of the Senate. I have been engaged in the personalities and profiles and the work of the Senate throughout my adolescence, truly. The first book my mother gave me was the autobiography of Malcolm X. And then beyond that, I became very invested in some of the players that were of note, such as Robert Kennedy. And from there, just sort of a spiral. So admittedly, I was actually never ambitious about becoming a local elected official. I admired the opportunity to assist local officials, but I actually never dreamt of being the mayor of anything. Local politics is a little bit too engaged in personality and people's particular expectations of one's public and private conduct. I think there's a little bit of an appropriate buffer when you look at the federal legislature and service in Washington. I've always been ambitious about the United States Senate. It was one of the few things that I told my father, who's now deceased, that I would absolutely commit myself to when the time came and I was of the appropriate age. So my only political ambition has been to be a member of the United States Senate.
Talk about this. So you mentioned reparations. How do you envision that? You mentioned the legislation, introduced, but walk us through that and what that looks like.
Well, it's a critical piece of legislation. I think that some people would want to imagine or have been compelled to imagine that because it targets a specific constituency, Black Americans who are descendants of slavery in this country, that it would be limited in its scope and impact. But I think people have to understand that the impact of giving of equity and financial solvency to somewhere between 14-26% of the United States population would be helpful to all of us. We are not able to compete in a competitive housing market. We are not able to independently finance our own education. We're not able to build our own production, manufacturing, and trade institutions as a result of generational poverty. And so some of the cures, but certainly not all of them, because this is legislation that's still being studied and carved out. But for me, it would certainly include having an institution that functions essentially like a domestic embassy for American descendants of slaves. That would be funded through the legislation. And, of course, direct cash payments. But as it is, some very skilled economists, to include Dr. Sandy Darity, have extended their research to provide what a round figure of what each American who is a descendant of slavery would receive in direct cash payments. But it's difficult to speak on that, knowing that, again, that is ongoing and really determining what is that bottom four figure. There is not just an HBCU in the United States that has a $1 billion endowment. The institution of relevance to me being Howard University, and that I spent quite a few years of my adult life there as a continuing student, it's probably about as close as we've got with an 800,000 plus endowment, but it's tied to so many debts and liabilities that it pales in comparison to major state institutions and certainly the Ivy League that have $1 billion times 50, times 30, times 15, and we're just not there yet. So reparations would cure a number of those things, but obviously on the business side, giving equity, giving space to Black people who descend from this particular experience, this tragic experience where debt is owed or debt was acknowledged and up to this point has not been cured. But that is not the entirety of what's being proposed here, but I think it gives you of an appropriate picture of where we're headed with that work and the important satisfaction of an ill that we've been trying to address as a country for a long time.
Joined by Brendan Dean. He is running for United States Senate on the Democrat side here on the program. Brendan, you mayor of Brighton, and like this, so I grew up in Shelby County. I know the area pretty well. I did an internship at Bessemer. You go through some of those places, Midfield, Brighton, Lipscomb, Bessemer, and it's a relic of a forgotten time back in the industrial age of Birmingham. And you go to these places, and they feel like they've been forgotten about, they've been left behind. What do you need? What was your goal there as mayor? How do you turn those places like that around in Alabama? We have them down here in our listening audience. I mean, Pritchard at one time was a thriving suburb of Mobile. What do you do? Well, how do you fix this and get these places back on the right track?
Well, Jeff, this is the part where a well-trained politician is supposed to tell you about all the hope that we have and all the opportunities and how my leadership is simply going to transform all of those realities just because I'm a good person and I mean well, right? But the reality of it is, I think that for the most part, many of our citizens have been misled. We have a Black political class that operates predominantly within the limitations of the Democratic Party, that has not been honest about its policy, that has not been honest about its liabilities and obligations to interests that don't serve those communities. And the largest part of the population is either uninformed about that, or is so disgusted as to be unengaged with that, with the nature of the crises that they experience and quality of life. Those communities don't have advocates. The people who have the voice and the intention and the integrity to show up without alternative motives are really not present in the leadership index in the types of communities that you've described. This is a function of neglect. This is a function of abstinence on the part of those who are duly elected to represent these constituencies, even in that they may not hold the purse strings of what I think the state of Gilda shared with me that we, through the AO reporter, but the Capital Journal, a $9 billion in operating funds is right now what the state of Alabama has, and a significant share of that money is not being brought into communities like that for any investment whatsoever. But there is, at a very microscopic local level, an absolute and abhorrent negligence and lack of responsibility and integrity on what the general public is being told and indoctrinated with in terms of what they deserve as taxpaying citizens. And when citizens forget how to be citizens, when citizens have no sense of entitlement to a share of the profits and revenues of a state or a county, and they settle for abstract policy that yields no immediate benefit, then that's exactly what you get. It would be often the case, and surprisingly so, to be in a room with many leaders who look like me or subscribe to the same party platform that I subscribe to, before even having to interact with people who are hardened in their conservatism and their bigotry against my community. But the advocacy and the conversations were just not taking place. The intention is just hardly there. I think citizens just have to reevaluate the pedigree of people that they vote for, people that they have confidence in sending to City Hall, to the commission, to the judiciary, to prosecutorial stations, law enforcement stations, to the legislature in particular. For example, we have a prison crisis. We have a very real prison crisis in our state. What is it, upward of 300,000 persons incarcerated and probably another 200,000 in some way engaged with a court system or justice system stationed through parole, probation. There is not a bill there was not a bill in this previous session of the legislature brought forth by the Democrats to address the prison crises in our state. I don't know if a Democrat has up to this point even attempted to appeal to an international court or to the United Nations on the prison crisis occurring in the state of Alabama, but I could argue that it certainly qualifies based on what we're seeing in the way of violence.
Brandon, we're up against a break here, but real quick before we let you go, folks want to find out more about your campaign, more about what you're up to, how to get in touch with you or any of that. Tell them where they can look.
So Twitter is a platform, I understand. I'm on it. You can find me just spelling out my name, which you have Brandon Dean or Potosynthesis, which is a title or a professional style that I use in those platforms. We have a public Facebook account, a follow page, and that's just my name or Potosynthesis, Brandon Dean. That's on Facebook. We've got YouTube content up. Instagram, again, Potosynthesis, or just my name, Brandon Dean. So we're in all of those spaces. And then more importantly, go to 1819 News. 1819 News has been very insistent about giving space and giving an audience to me to share my thoughts and my policies, more so than really any other platform in the state. So if you really want to get into the nature of what the heck I'm talking about as a candidate, what lens I'm coming from in observing these issues, go to 1819 News and search Brandon Dean. That's where you'll find the bulk of quality information that you can about who I am and what I am.
Brandon, we got to cut you short there, but thanks for the plug for 1819 News. This is FM Talk 106.5.